The Weed Smart Sports Guys is brought to you by SummaxBatteries.com, the go-to website for all your battery needs. SummaX Batteries carries a full line of super heavy-duty ultra-alkaline lithium and button cell batteries. SummaX Batteries compares in quality to well-known national brands, and the best part, SummaX Batteries are priced much lower than their competitors. Flashlights, remote controls, gaming controls, headphones, digital cameras, hearing aids, smoke alarms, whatever device you need a battery for, SummaX has the best batteries at the best price for your device. You can order a 24-pack of AA or AAA heavy-duty batteries for only $5.99, or a 24-pack of ultra-alkaline, ideal for all kinds of gaming and high-tech devices, at just $12.99. Order today and use coupon code BOSTON at checkout. That's coupon code BOSTON, all uppercase, and save 20% off your entire order. Once again, that's coupon code BOSTON at checkout and save big today. SummaxBatteries.com, CellMaxBatteries.com, the official sponsor of the Wicked Smart Sports Guys. All right, welcome back to another episode of the Wicked Smart Sports Guys podcast. Thanks, as always, to Dolly Dreams for the intro music. This week, we're joined by Guy Boston Sports NFL and Patriots writer Colin Cannata once again. Colin, how are you doing? How is your bout with COVID? Is it over?
Yeah, I think I'm in the clear, KJ. Thanks again for having me.
Can you smell things again, Colin?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I'm very happy to report to the folks out there that after, I'd say, about 5 to 7 days of absolutely no taste and smell, it started to return slowly, and I'd say I'm back at about 90-95%. So can't ask for much more than that. I'll be able to taste some food around the holidays here, feeling good, getting my energy back. No complaints. I think, you know, there have been a lot of people who have been hit harder than I was. So for that, I count my blessings.
Yeah, well, you definitely don't want to miss out on the smells and tastes of Christmas. So that's good. And Colin, also, I mean, 90-95%, that's all you can ask for. At this point in the NFL season, nobody's 100% healthy. So that's the most you can really hope for. We are not going to talk about the Patriots because the Patriots are wildly uninteresting at the moment. And we want to talk about something interesting, which brings us to the theme of this episode, which is that we picked the 5 most interesting teams that each of us find the most interesting in the NFL playoff picture. I thought about doing maybe the 5 teams you want to win the most. I really thought about doing your power rankings for teams you think could win the Super Bowl. I thought that might be too similar. I think we both would have the Chiefs number 1 in that scenario, and like from there it gets kind of pretty similar from there too. So I thought talking about the teams that we found the most interesting in that field would have been more fun or interesting, if you will.
It's good use of the word, KJ. And I agree. I think it gives you a different angle on things. And if you look at the top teams, you power rank them. I think everybody, most people, not just us, most people in the media as a whole are going to have a lot of the same teams. So this gives us the opportunity to look at some of these teams through a different lens and, you know, in both their journey to the playoffs and how they might be able to make some noise in the playoffs.
All right. So we'll just get right into it. We have them ranked 5-1, and I'll let you start, Colin. You're the guest. So you can give me your number 5 most interesting team in the NFL playoff field.
So I'm going to start in the AFC, actually the AFC East, first time in 20 years that the Buffalo Bills are the AFC East Division champions. And that is not necessarily the reason why I think they're interesting. I think they're interesting because they've proven to be a really dynamic team on both sides of the ball, really, and they're able to make plays, and they're very opportune. They're very well coached. I mean, Sean McDermott has done a phenomenal job, and you also have to give credit to the general manager. I mean, you know, you needed a weapon for Josh Allen. You go out and you get Stephon Diggs, who has just been phenomenal for them, and, you know, it's allowed Cole Beasley to kind of find another role where he's really effective. I mean, they have a lot of good things going on both offense and defense, and by no means are they, quote-unquote, the best defense in the National Football League, but they're giving teams problems. They have, you know, good players all over both sides of the ball. And I just think they're a team, their play style, the way they're coached, and, you know, the way Josh Allen is really hot right now, they're interesting to me because I think, you know, we talk about if we were to power rank them, obviously the Chiefs are going to be at the top of the power rankings. I think the Bills might be the only team in the AFC, and, you know, I'm sure you have a different opinion and others have different opinions. I think they might be the only team in the AFC that has a legitimate chance to knock off the Chiefs, and I don't know how legitimate of a chance anyone has to knock off the Chiefs, But I don't know. There's something about the way the Bills have been playing, and the Chiefs by no means have been blowing teams out. I mean, they've just been winning games, and that's kind of what the Chiefs do. I don't know. I guess I'd like to hear what you think about it, but I think the Bills are probably the one team, maybe Tennessee, but I think to a much lesser degree. You saw the Steelers falter. I think the Bills have the best chance out of anyone on that side, you know, of the league to knock off the Chiefs and maybe, just maybe, have somebody other than Patrick Mahomes going back to the Super Bowl.
So it's funny you mentioned Tennessee, because to me, the Bills and the Titans are the two teams that I look at and I say, when are they going to start to turn back into themselves? Like, when are they going to turn into the pumpkin at Cinderella's ball? You know, just when is the clock going to strike midnight on these guys? Because when you have Ryan Tannehill and Josh Allen as your quarterbacks, it's just those guys, they're playing way above their heads. And Ryan Tannehill is different because we've seen a large sample size of Ryan Tannehill, and this is insane what he's doing. You never see quarterbacks have this kind of mid-career shift to actually being really, really good. But that said, neither of these teams made the list. The Bills, I really have that same thought about Josh Allen, but it's in a different way, because I think what we're seeing from Josh Allen is him really reaching his ceiling. Like, a lot of people, when he came into the NFL, the line on him was, well, he has a really high ceiling. And you hear that about a lot of these guys who come out in any sport, that, oh, they're really athletic, they have a really high ceiling, but they never reach it. None of these guys ever reach it. They're just really athletic, and that's what the token thing that people say about it. Well, they're really athletic, so they have a really high ceiling. And Allen is like the only guy I can remember that was that middling prospect that came out and had that kind of prototype about him, and he ended up kind of reaching that ceiling, at least right now. I am wondering when and if we're ever going to see floor Josh Allen again. Like, when is that guy going to pop back up? And it's curious to me if we're going to see it in the playoffs. Now, with that said, I find your point pretty interesting about the Chiefs side of things, because I think that that's a pretty good point, because if Josh Allen is playing at his ceiling, he can play like, or, you know, as close to as anyone can to Patrick Mahomes at his absolute peak. It's just he doesn't have that absolute, like, killer consistency that Mahomes has to be able to do it week in and week out. He has, you know, done it pretty often this season. I don't trust him to be able to do it as well and as consistently as Mahomes can. If he does, I think that, yes, the Bills have a really good chance of knocking them off, but it's just the sentence of the Bills are the second best team in the AFC, or the Bills have the second best chance at coming out of the AFC, or the best chance of beating the Chiefs. It's just that sentence doesn't feel right coming out of my mouth.
Yeah, and you're right. I don't think anybody thought that this is where we would be at this current point. But you look at the Bills, and I think it's important to remember that football is a momentum game and a confidence game. And, you know I mentioned the Steelers. You saw them when they lost their confidence and lost their momentum, just how bad it's been. The Bills are just seem to be gaining momentum and gaining confidence and getting better and better every week and smoother on offense every week. So I think, you know, football is a game of flow. And if your flow is trending in the positive direction, as long as, like you said, we don't have that moment where Josh Allen, all of a sudden you snap his fingers and he's back to the Josh Allen that we've known for the first few years of his career, it is crazy. I even find myself, you know, kind of caught up on those words, but I think I truly believe it at this point that they do have the best chance besides the Chiefs. As crazy as it may sound, I think it's the reality.
And so many people doubted Josh Allen. So many people still don't like Josh Allen that I don't know. I just wonder if he's ever going to revert back to that player. Like, it reminds me of what we saw with Doug Peterson and the Eagles. So many people thought Doug Peterson was a bad coach, and he somehow dragged that Eagles team to a Super Bowl. And I wonder if Josh Allen is going to have the same kind of pathing where he has this one great year. Who knows? Maybe he wins a Super Bowl. But now you see what's happened to Doug Peterson in recent years. He's kind of gone back, and now some people are even calling him to be fired. So maybe this is kind of Josh Allen's one-hit wonder year, and then he goes back from here. I don't know. I mean, he does look really good out there, not just with his mobility, but you can see that arm strength, and playing with Stephon Diggs has obviously helped him a lot. But we should move on. We have these other teams to talk about. This is the first of maybe 10 that we're going to talk about, up to 10. We'll see if we overlap anywhere. But my number 5 team is the Colts. And the Colts are interesting to me because they're so uninteresting in many ways. And I find that they've been so good this season. You know, they have the 10-4 record. They're tied with the Titans. And they're playing the Steelers this week, so who knows if they're going to be able to come out on top in that game. But Philip Rivers has not looked good this season. He's looked, like, you know, pretty washed up. He's still 12th in the league in passer rating, 22 touchdowns, 9 picks. It just doesn't seem like, I mean, that team's very much built on running the ball. They have Jonathan Taylor, and he's been certainly great, and they have that three-headed monster in the backfield with Hines, and even Wilkins has been really good, and that's even without Marlon Mack. So, I mean, that team was clearly built around the running game, and their defense has been spectacular as well. So they really have a perfect complement, and T.Y. Hilton started to pick it up. Really, it's hard to find the weakness on the Colts other than can Philip Rivers really do it at his age and his current skill level. And we'll talk more about another guy that I also feel this way about later for a team in the future. But I think it all comes down to the Colts, to him, and whether or not he still has enough to, you know, lead a team to the Super Bowl, because he's never been able to do that at any point in his career. Will he be able to do that now when he's really in the twilight and not the same player he once was?
Yeah, and I know they say defense wins championships, and in certain cases you have to believe that, and you've seen examples of that. But if you look at the field in the AFC, you've got, you know, we just talked about two of the teams, the Chiefs, the Bills. You got some teams that can hang points. So as good as the Colts' defense is, they're obviously not going to be able to pitch a shutout every game or, you know, hold a team to 10 points, 14 points every game. They're going to need Phil Rivers at some point to produce, and you made the point. You took the words right out of my mouth. Phil Rivers has played with some good teams, obviously. Obviously, they were, you know, when he was with the Chargers, and he was not able to get those teams over the hump, was not able to do enough to get to that Super Bowl that's kind of eluded him his whole career. I don't know if I see it happening now, but you are right. If they can find a way, you know, sometimes in the postseason, you saw it last year with Tennessee. Obviously, Jonathan Taylor and those other guys aren't Derrick Henry, but the run game as a whole with a good O-line, you know, if you can run the ball effectively and kind of control the clock, control the game, and keep some of these dynamic quarterbacks off the field for as much time as possible, I think you have a chance. But I think you're right when you say Phil Rivers is definitely the X factor. The team around him is good enough to go to a Super Bowl and potentially win a Super Bowl. It's going to come down to Phil Rivers and if he, you know, he has that magical run left in him.
And in many ways, I think they're one of the most complete teams. Like, on both sides of the ball, they're still really good. I don't trust Philip Rivers at the end of the day. I really don't. And, I mean, their offense has been, you know, 28.5 points per game is certainly up there. But it doesn't look prolific when you watch that team. I mean, they don't play like a team putting up 28.5 points per game. And maybe that's about how good their defense is too. But and that's why that's what you're focused on. But it's a team that I look at and I say they're a lot better than I expected them to be. I expected them to be, you know, fighting tooth and nail for a playoff spot. And I guess with considering, you know, where things are in the AFC, they could still miss out on a spot. But they've been really consistent. And it's come to the point where this week, I expect them to beat the Steelers. I think that the way the Steelers are going, the way they're going, I just expect them to win that game. And that was not something I thought I would have been saying about the Colts this season. I thought they were going to be middle, you know, 8-8, 9-7 kind of team. And they're clearly much better than that. I just wonder, it's another case of how far can you really take it with this guy at this point. All right, we'll move on. Who's your number four team?
So I'm going to stay in the AFC. I'm going to go with the Cleveland Browns. And the Cleveland Browns are so interesting to me because I really don't know what to make of them still. And in the past few weeks, they've shown you that they're a pretty good team. They have some serious potential, and that Baker Mayfield's probably playing the best football that, you know, maybe he's ever played at the national, you know, at the NFL level. Obviously, you take that loss to Baltimore, but that's to no fault of Baker Mayfield. It's the fact that the defense couldn't get an opportune stop. So we talk about these teams being well-rounded. I just don't know what Browns team and what Browns defense you're going to get. You know, held the Giants to 6 points, Colt McCoy playing quarterback, maybe not the greatest accomplishment, but they looked good in prime time the other night. But giving up 47 points to, you know, Lamar Jackson with a little bit of Trace McSorley sprinkled in there is not going to, you know, win you playoff games. But it's another example of a team that has so much talent And it just comes down to whether they can put it all together at the same time. Because the Browns are the type of team that you can't just have the offense going well, because you saw the offense go well against Baltimore on Monday night a couple weeks ago, and it wasn't enough. You score 42 points and you lose that football game because you just could not get that key stop. You got them to fourth down, you couldn't get them off the field. Third downs, couldn't get them off the field. And if you can't do that in the playoffs, it's going to be an early exit. But I think, you know, something that's accounting into it too is just that it's so interesting to see the Browns in this situation. I mean, now with the Steelers losing again, they're one game out, and they play the Steelers week 17. So we'd have to, you know, calculate how the tiebreakers would work out and stuff like that. But they got the Jets and the Steelers.
Yeah, I can tell you that the Browns need the Steelers to lose this week to the Colts, and then they need to beat the Jets. And if that happens, then week 17's for the division. But if they were tied at the end of the season, the Steelers would win the tiebreaker because they have a better division record.
Okay, thank you. So, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, you're going to be scoreboard watching and rooting for the Colts this weekend if you're the Browns. But, I mean, either way, I think they're a team. It's, you know, it's, there's always a couple teams that get into the postseason where you really don't quite know where to place them or really know exactly what they could do. I think that's the Browns. I think they have the capability to come out and shock one of the top teams in the AFC, but I also think they have the capability to come out and pitch a complete stinker and go home early. So to me, that's why they're so interesting.
So the Browns were also my number four team. And you want to hear a fun stat?
Absolutely.
The Browns are the only team in the playoff picture right now with a negative point differential. And let me remind you that the 6-8 Washington football team is currently in the playoff field. They have a positive point differential at 6-8 of plus a half point. The Browns have a negative point differential at 10-4 of negative 0.4. At 10-4, they have a negative point differential.
Yeah, it's absolutely insane. And I actually saw that stat too, and it kind of blew my mind. But if you look at their results over the season, I think obviously a 38-6 loss to Baltimore and a 38-7 loss to the Steelers will certainly not help your differential there. But to lose four games out of the 14 games you've played so far and still somehow be negative is absolutely mind-boggling, and I almost thought it was a mistake when I saw it.
Yeah, so Baker Mayfield is a guy that I've actually really liked. I don't know how you feel about him. A very polarizing guy. He's like mayonnaise. You either love him or hate him. And Baker Mayfield... you know, I when he came out, I always loved his personality. I thought it was, you know, exciting. You know, he was always a guy that very polarizing, didn't care what people thought, but, you know, just did things that were, you know, just a little crazy. Like when he ran on the field in Oklahoma, he really was this guy that seemed like very energetic, and he seemed kind of, you know, a guy that was fun to watch. And, you know, it's a guy that's not extremely mobile, and it's rare that you have a pocket passer that has that kind of personality. And Baker Mayfield certainly does. And so I've always been someone that's been rooting for Baker Mayfield to do well. I just, you know, I still have my questions about him. I think, you know, when he's at his best, he makes some throws that are incredible. I think he made one throw, I remember his rookie year, where he was on the run falling out of bounds and he just threw it up on the sideline and made a perfect throw, sideline catch to one of his receivers. And, I mean, he makes throws like that sometimes that just blow your mind. And it has that kind of air about him that you always think that the next mistake is coming and he's going to end up costing his team. And, you know, without Odell, that team, you know, they've really played better without him. But, and it seems like Jarvis is, you know, that him and Jarvis have a good complement to each other. And the real thing about Cleveland is just how much talent they have everywhere. Like, we talk about the defense and the holes there. But when you have Myles Garrett and Denzel Ward, players like that, who just can change a game with one or two plays, that, like, I start to look at that, like, the way they're constructed, and I get a little bit of hope. Like, you know, never mind all the talent they have on offense with all the guys they signed, Hooper and Landry and Chubb and Hunt and everything they're able to do there. But just those, if those two guys can just make one or two plays a game, that could be enough. And that's why I wonder, can this team really make the Super Bowl with the way they're constructed just based on pure talent? And of course, Kevin Stefanski has been a huge upgrade at head coach as well.
Yeah, you're 100% right. And whatever Stefanski, you know, brought in, whatever new system, it seems like it's worked for Baker Mayfield. And I will say, KJ, I know you mentioned this at the beginning, I like Baker Mayfield. I think there's a lot there. I think he's just another guy that it comes down to consistency. And I maybe have the same worries about Baker Mayfield that you voiced for Josh Allen. Is, you know, is he maybe at his ceiling right now? And, you know, could it just happen really quick where all of a sudden he's back to the floor? I don't know. But if Baker Mayfield's playing confident, because I think he especially, you know, everyone plays better when they're feeling confident and they get into rhythm. But when he really gets himself going, he kind of has that swagger and he's starting to feel himself a little bit. And I think he's really tough to stop when he's feeling like that. And you mentioned it, that run game, the two-headed monster. I don't know. I think it'll come down to defense. But to me, like I said, that's why the Browns are so interesting, because I think there's a wide variation of possible results that could happen to the Browns in the playoffs.
All right, who's your number three team?
So my number three team is, I'm going to the NFC. I'm going with the New Orleans Saints, and I'm going to tell you why. They're another team that for a while they were so hot and they were playing so well, and even those first few weeks when they didn't have Drew Brees and Taysom Hill was running the show, they were making it work because they were just so good on defense, and they were able to, you know, run with Taysom, make the simple throws, the smart plays, and continue to win football games. Now that Drew Brees is back, I'm a little, you know, just confused about the Saints. Obviously, you have to roll with Drew Brees. You can't roll with Taysom Hill going into the playoffs. But coming off two straight losses, I know they put up a good fight against Kansas City, but their offense was so flat at the beginning of that game. And I know, yes, Brees, he's been out for several weeks. He's probably still banged up playing with, you know, I think he had 8+ broken ribs or something ridiculous like that. So you got to understand and give the guy a little bit of time. But right now, time is not of the essence. You only really have two more games to get right, and then you're, you know, thrown right into the playoffs. As of now, they've lost that bye that they were possessing for pretty much the whole season. As the Packers have now passed them, and, you know, we'd have to look at the Packers' schedule to see what they have left, but you would think the Packers, now that they control that bye, will hold on to that bye, and then the Saints have to play an extra game, which with Drew Brees is not completely ideal. It is the Kansas City Chiefs that they played last week, so it's tough to gauge, but obviously the defense was not as effective, was not able to get off the field as much on third down, and that'll happen to anybody playing against Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, and Tyreek Hill. But, you know, they're interesting to me because I think they're one of those teams that's kind of heading in the wrong direction. You know, we talked about some teams that are building their confidence and heading in the right direction towards the playoffs and building themselves up. I think the Saints are kind of, you know, stumbling into the playoffs a little bit. The loss to Philadelphia was pretty ugly, albeit it was Taysom Hill and not Drew Brees. But I don't know, the Saints just haven't felt the same to me the past few weeks. And I think if you're a Saints fan, you got to be a little bit nervous of what's to come in the playoffs, knowing that you're not playing your best football in December like you really want to be.
So the Saints are my number three team as well. And I mean, when you talk about Drew Brees, they said, and his health, they said that he wasn't going to come back unless he was fully healthy. So we're to assume that he was ready to go. He was ready to come back. And he did not look good. And here's a few Drew Brees stats for you, because on paper, he looks fine. He's fifth in the league in passer ratings, you know, 21 touchdowns, 4 picks, 70% completion percentage. Those are good numbers. But if you look at his statistics from this season and compare him to his past seasons, he's just not the same player. Like, look at his yards per game. Drew Brees has always, you know, made his career on yards. If you go to his yards per game, it is the lowest since 2006, since he came to New Orleans. It's the lowest of his, you know, since he was in San Diego. Okay, lowest since 2005, I should say. And I know what you're going to say. You're going to say, oh, he left the game early against the Niners and that fight. If you take that game out and average it out through the other 9 games, it is still the lowest since 2005. His lowest yards per game. And, you know, again, the other numbers look fine, but when you watch him on the field, it does not look like he's a great quarterback, the great quarterback he once was. He looks like a shell of his former self, and that's what concerns me. And that whole New Orleans offense has been weird this year, not just Drew Brees, but Michael Thomas and what's been going on with him, and Jared Cook looks pretty washed at this point. And it's just that whole team, like, you know, Emmanuel Sanders, he had a pretty decent game, you know, against the Chiefs, but all season he hasn't been really clicking the way they wanted it to, and, it, you know, he hasn't really been the player I think that he was, they were coming in, that he was hoping, they were hoping he would be, and certainly they were hoping he would complement Michael Thomas, who hasn't been around. But just there's a lot weird about that Saints offense that concerns me, and it's so funny because for years it was the other way around. It was the Saints offense is so good, but can their defense keep up? Now I feel like you almost worry, is their offense going to be good enough come playoff time?
Yeah, I agree, KJ. And you look at the Saints' remaining schedule, and they have Minnesota and Carolina. You know, those are two games where the Saints are going to have to play well on the offensive side of the ball to build up that confidence because, you know, obviously I sit here and I talk about football and I'm not actively playing football, but I truly believe that football is a game of confidence, flow, and just, you know, getting that positivity moving forward and continuing to build on it. And after these last two losses, they're going to need some positivity. So hopefully they can find, for their sake, some positive things to, you know, take out of this Minnesota game and this Carolina game. If you get two wins, you get the offense flowing again, maybe you feel better about yourselves come the postseason. But I don't know with the Saints. Is Drew Brees too old? I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, and that age question is going to be a question with a lot of these guys, and I'll get to a larger point about that in a second, but why don't you give your number two team next? Who do you have next on your list?
So I'm going to go with another team in the NFC that's kind of trending in the wrong direction, and they've been able to pull out wins in the past 2 weeks. It's the Seattle Seahawks. You look at their game results over the course of the season, and in their first eight games, Russell Wilson threw for over 300 yards five times. Since then, he has not done it once. So, you know, you have games where he threw for 197, 121, 206. That's not the Russell Wilson. I mean, I feel like, KJ, we were sitting here, you know, before the Seahawks bye, which was week six, those first 5 weeks, it was like, oh my goodness, Russell Wilson could be the MVP of this league this season. And since then, you know, maybe we don't fault Russell Wilson. Obviously, they've had some protection issues, and they've had some other issues with their team, but I mean, it just has not been the same Seahawks offense, and for the most part, they've done enough, but, you know, you look back at that game against the Giants, and that was just ugly. The Giants kept giving them the ball back and giving them chances to come back and win that game, and they just had no answers for the Giants' defense. Obviously, the Giants' defense has played pretty well here as of late. But, I mean, with Russell Wilson, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, all those guys, you expect them to be able to figure something out and put up enough points to beat a 17-point performance from the New York Giants. They couldn't do that. Since then, they had their, you know, kind of Jets bye where they beat them 40-3, but Wilson only had 206 yards in that game. And then they struggled again against Washington. I know another team with a young, up-and-coming, solid defense, but Russell Wilson threw for 121 yards this past weekend. They squeaked out a 2015 win, but I'm thinking, and you know, obviously hindsight's 20/20. But if Alex Smith was in that game and not Dwayne Haskins, the Redskins were down in Seahawks territory, pretty close to the red zone, with a chance to, you know, take a lead in that game with not much time left for Russell Wilson to come back on the field. Dwayne Haskins obviously couldn't get the job done. But if you face a quarterback who's a little bit better than Dwayne Haskins, they're probably going to get that job done and put you in a really tough spot. So I need to see the Seahawks kind of turn it back on again. And they have a great test. They play the Rams, which, you know, the Rams coming off a bad week against the Jets will be trying to bounce back. That'll be a great game to kind of see where, you know, both of those teams are. And obviously that game has division implications as well. But, you know, like I said, KJ, you look at, I know, you know, the quarterback isn't the whole team, and looking at Russell Wilson's passing yards doesn't tell the whole story, but I think it tells enough of the story that they've clearly been struggling to hang points like they were. I mean, they scored 30 points in six out of their first seven games. Like, they were really clicking on all cylinders, and since then it just hasn't been the same. So you need to see that come back to life, or the Seahawks, with a subpar at best defense, are not going to be able to really make any noise in the playoffs. But it is hard to bet against Russell Wilson. He's got the veteran pedigree. He's been in a lot of playoff situations before. So I don't know what to make of them right now, but like I said, I think they are trending in the wrong direction with not too much time to figure it out.
Yeah, it's been a weird year for the Seahawks team. Obviously, you know, Russell Wilson starts out, he looks like he's going to win the MVP. And now he's certainly cooled off, but you still look at his numbers, he's going to have a career high in touchdown passes. He's almost assuredly going to have a career high in yards. I mean, he's going to get there as well. He, you know, he's already set his career high for touchdown passes. He might get to 40, which he's never done before in his career. And he also has a career high for picks, And, you know, he has 13 interceptions this season. He's never thrown more than 11 in his career. So it's been a very, very weird year for the Seahawks, not just on offense, but you look at their defense, it's unrecognizable to defenses we've seen a Seahawks pass. It's one of the worst, I mean, out there, especially the secondary. They get thrown all over, and despite having Jamal Adams there, who's, you know, certainly played more in the box, and I know he's, you know, I think he set a record for sacks by a defensive back in a season, but, you know, even still, it's just been a weird, weird season for the Seattle team. It's unrecognizable to the team we saw when they won the Super Bowl way back when. And, you know, you're right. They have been streaky here recently. And, you know, it's a theme here with a lot of the teams we have on the list. Is there's streakiness. You start to worry, can you trust them or not? And is that streakiness going to continue into the playoffs? Or are they going to show, you know, their talent and how talented we believe they are, not just from the beginning of the season, but just when you look at their roster? So, you know, when I look at the Seahawks, I didn't have them on my list just because I think there's a theme on my list of you know, whether or not I trust the quarterback. And a lot of it has to do with age. I'll just tell you right now that four of the five quarterbacks on my list are all getting up there in age, and I wonder if they're, you know, still have enough in the tank. And the only exception to that was Baker Mayfield, who I still have questions about as a quarterback overall. So when I look at the Seahawks team, I didn't have them on my list because ultimately I still trust Russell Wilson, and I think it's going to look a lot like what we saw from the Seahawks last season, I think. And it's the same reason I don't have the Packers on the list. I've seen those teams in the playoffs so many times and those quarterbacks in the playoffs so many times that, to me, I just feel pretty comfortable with I'm going to see something I've seen before from this team, whether it be, you know, what we saw in the last few years from them or, you know, sometime further in the past. But I just expect to see, you know, when I see these teams in the playoffs, I've come to expect it. I've come to, you know, feel comfortable with it. And that's why they don't pique my curiosity.
Yeah, you're right. And at the end of the day, Russell Wilson is one of the premier players in the league. And like you said, it comes down to experience. And he has that playoff experience. And there have been plenty of times where he's had to figure it out on the fly in the postseason. And he's been able to do that. So I guess it's just interesting to me for the reason that they're kind of trending downwards, but they're a team that, because they're so talented, I would think that they're, you know, one of my favorites in the conference, but now they're kind of making me question that. So leaving me on the fence has me interested, but you have to probably trust Russell Wilson, right? I mean, he's done it before. He's proven that he's a champion, that he's a guy who can, you know, take you all the way. So I, you know, I'd much rather have Russell Wilson that I'm trying to have figure it out than a, you know, 40-year-old Drew Brees or a guy like Baker Mayfield or Josh Allen who don't have that, you know, playoff experience already.
Yeah, so I'll give my number two team now, and that's the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And I think that the interesting is the perfect way to describe the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I came away from that game against the Falcons, and for a second, for a half a second, I wanted to say, you know, maybe this is just what the Bucs needed. Maybe this second half is a sign of things to come, and maybe this is, you know, them getting back on track and then finally clicking. And then I thought to myself, it's one of the worst passing defenses in the NFL, and it took them this long to get it going. Like, this is what you should have been doing all game against Atlanta. And what was happening in that first half? So I can't give them the benefit of the doubt and say, well, you know, they finally got on track in the second half, they finally clicked. No, that even if you were doing that all game, you can't say that about, because this team is so bad, you should be able to throw on this team. And the fact that they couldn't is incredibly concerning. And all season, they've had this, you know, weird thing about them where they just can't get the pieces to fit. They have all this offensive talent. That first game with Antonio Brown against the Saints, where they finally get all these pieces together, and you're thinking, here we go. How are you going to be able to find three guys that can cover Antonio Brown, Mike Evans, and Chris Godwin? How are you possibly going to cover all of those guys who are on the field? Never mind Rob Gronkowski. And somehow, they just haven't been able to play matchup football and say, who has the worst matchup? We're attacking that guy. We're throwing to you all game as long as we're throwing at your worst guy. For some reason, they haven't been able to do that. And it confuses me why. Because these receivers are talented enough that you should be able to just pick on somebody all game long. And they haven't been able to figure that out. And I can't for the life of me understand why. Part of me wants to think maybe they're just playing possum. Maybe they want to hold it back until the playoffs because they know they're this good. But I can't realistically give them the benefit of the doubt when there are so many questions about Tom Brady's age, his first year with the team. You know, if he had been with this team for, I don't know, let's say 20 years, then you might say, and been with these around these guys a lot, you might say, well, they know they can just turn it on. You can't just flip a switch with guys you just really got together with and just started playing with. So it confuses me so much why they haven't been able to just be able to attack the worst guy on the field for these defenses that they're playing, especially the likes of the Falcons, who don't even have a good number one or number two corner, never mind a number three guy. So how are you having so much trouble scoring on offense? It's just it's incredibly befuddling.
Yeah, it really is, and to, you know, no secrets now. Tampa Bay was my number one most interesting team, and you know I think part of it's the Tom Brady effect, and everybody across the country who's an NFL fan is certainly very interested by the Buccaneers because obviously number 12 is leading the charge. But it's just been such a roller coaster season for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, where there are moments where you're like, wow, like maybe they're really starting to put this together, and maybe they really could make a push and be better than anybody in the NFC, and then they have kind of, you know, come back to or fall back down to the ceiling. I mean, not the ceiling, to the basement. And it's like, wait, where did all that progress just go? And I think a good example of that, I know we're going back several weeks, but they had that big primetime game against the Saints, and everyone was all hyped up. You know, they lost by two scores the first time they played the Saints week one, and obviously it was Brady's first time with these new guys, and it's tough to expect him to, you know, come out firing all cylinders right away. But then, you know, you have your second chance against the Saints, and you get literally embarrassed. And it was just so confusing, and they had nothing. They had no answers. They had no offense. They had no chance of stopping the Saints. And, it, you know, it's just kind of been up and down for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And then they lose, they lose back-to-back games to the Rams and the Chiefs, both by a field goal only. But neither of those games really felt like, you know, the Buccaneers were in control at any point or going to win. They kind of had to claw their way back to even get it to the point where it was close. So with this offense, obviously so talented and so many players who can make big plays, but you have to be able to put it all together, and you have to be, you know, calling the right plays to get these guys open and get these guys in the matchups you want. And then on the defensive side of the ball, that's been to me the most befuddling part. It's like some games you're like, wow, you can't run on them. The corners are playing pretty well. You know, you've got Devin White, who's in my opinion going to be a complete superstar in this league. But then there's other games where it's like, wait, what happened? And the first half against Atlanta was an example of that. They could not get off the field. They could not stop Matt Ryan from just carving them up. It's really confusing. And because there's such a wide range of outcomes for this Buccaneers team, to me, they're by far the most interesting. Add in a little Brady effect, and you've got my number one team there. I agree with you, KJ. I just don't know what to think. I want to think, like, I'm one of the Patriots fans, and it's no secret that I'm a diehard Patriots fan if you've listened to me on this show before. I'm one of those Patriots fans who's still rooting for Tom Brady. Like, I'm not going to be buying a Tom Brady Tampa Bay Bucs jersey like some people and trading my allegiance to Tom Brady over my franchise that I've rooted for my whole life. But I'm pulling for Tom, and I want to see Tom prove to people that he can still do it. But it's like, you can't put yourself in a 17-0 hole because there are teams in the NFC playoffs who are way too good to blow that lead. You're not going to be playing the Atlanta Falcons in the playoffs. And obviously we know the Atlanta Falcons have a long history of blowing games and blowing big leads. So if you fall behind 17-0 to probably any of these teams in the NFC playoffs, you're going home early, and your season's going to be over. So they got to find a way to be consistent on both sides of the ball, starting at the beginning of the game and not waiting till the second half where you have to have an absolute onslaught to come back and win the game.
And the crazy thing is, you know, with this huge complement of weapons, Brady came in and people said, huge upgrade over Jameis Winston. You know, he's gonna really unlock Mike Evans and Chris Godwin and all these guys. And Mike Evans has had the lowest yards per game of his career. He's had the lowest receptions per game of his career. Chris Godwin's numbers are way down from last season, way, way down. Antonio Brown, even since he's came in, you want to throw him in the mix. If you don't count that one game he played with the Patriots as a season, it's his lowest yards per game since his rookie season and his lowest receptions per game since 2011. Like, none of these guys are playing well. And it'd be one thing if you were like, well, they're sharing the love and, you know, Brady's putting up big numbers. Brady's not even doing that well. He has a lower passer rating than Philip Rivers, who we talked about earlier having questions about. And Philip Rivers isn't playing with this huge, like, super team. You know, he's not playing with this all-star team in Indianapolis by any means. I mean, like, we talked about how well-rounded they are, but he doesn't have those kind of weapons there. Like, Brady, we thought he'd come here and make these guys better, and he's made them worse. And I can't help but look at that and say, like, these guys can't be happy playing with Brady. They might be happy that they're finally winning, but they can't enjoy the fact that their numbers are sacrificing so much when they've really made their careers on it. Like, you think Mike Evans is feeling good about, you know, 57 receptions for 779 yards? Like, no, he's going to have the first year of his career where he's not a 1,000-yard receiver. Like, Mike Evans is, I mean, he looks, a lot of people are blaming him, like, for how he's played. He has to feel like, I'm still the same guy. This guy just doesn't know how to get me the ball, or however he feels about it. But, I mean, it's remarkable to me. If you look at his yards per game, the lowest before this was 2017, where he put up 66.7 yards per game. He's a full 11 yards below that total, which is ridiculous. So, I don't know. I really thought this offense was going to be prolific. I thought it was going to be one of the best in the league. I thought it would be, really, despite Brady's age, I thought he would lead the league in touchdown passes. And, you know, just because there was a lack of a running game to that point, Ronald Jones certainly, you know, played really well this season. And they brought in Leonard Fournette. I didn't know they were going to do that. But you looked at what this offense was, and you thought, compared to what Brady had last season, it was just going to be so, so special. And it hasn't at all. And I just think that a lot of people there, Bruce Arians, Mike Evans, all these guys are incredibly, incredibly frustrated. And I wonder what that means for them come playoff time.
Yeah, I agree. And it goes back to consistency. And there's been no consistency. There's been a lot of flashes. But you got to be able to find consistency. Because in this NFC postseason picture, you know, that you're going to be playing good teams pretty much all the way through, especially, you know, the Buccaneers, who are probably not going to win the division. So you take into account they're going to be going on the road and playing against higher seeded teams. They're going to have to find some consistency. But hey, man, at the end of the day, we've seen the movie a ton of times in our lives. Tom Brady in the postseason is a different animal. And, you know, I go back to a point you made at the beginning. It is a little bit easier when, you know, it was Tom and Edelman and Gronk and guys that he had this rapport with that he'd built up and had so many clutch moments with in the past. It's a little bit tougher to say, all right, it's 3rd and 10 in overtime. I'm going to send, you know, Chris Godwin across the middle and have that play be perfectly in sync, as it was, you know, maybe Chris Godwin, or not maybe, Chris Godwin at this point, better player than Julian Edelman. But it's all about that comfort level and that rapport. So we got to see if these guys can come through in the clutch moments with Tom, because we know that Tom can't do it alone.
All right, my number one team is the Steelers. It has to be the Steelers. I mean, what we've seen the last few weeks is insane. I mean, with the 11-0 start, I mean, at one point in this podcast, I asked you what you thought their chances of going undefeated were. And I thought they were legitimately good when you looked at the fact that they had the Bengals on the schedule and they had all these teams on the schedule of the year. Like, they should be able to beat those guys. Like, that's a very winnable game. You know, the Bills, we're confused about the Bills. We don't know if they're all that good. Like, and the Steelers, it was the combination of their incredible defense, you know, the sack streak that team has, the pressure they're able to send, like, that all that stuff is just so, so elite. And then you look at their offense, and they have weapons on weapons, like Claypool, Washington, Deontay Johnson, Juju Smith-Schuster. The list doesn't stop of how many receivers these guys have on their team. They're just so deep at that position. And it just looked like they were going to be so, so difficult to stop. And it looked like they were on their road to being the number one seed, potentially, if the Chiefs couldn't catch them. And now they've just completely, completely fallen apart. And it comes back to, again, the quarterback. And like I said, it's a theme here with Roethlisberger, with Breeze, with Brady, with Rivers. Is this guy washed up? And certainly the last 3 weeks, Ben Roethlisberger has looked like he is washed up.
Yeah, 100%. And it's funny, kind of, I know it's slightly unrelated, but how news comes out that Roethlisberger is going to play next year, and then he goes out there, and it's like, oh my God, do you really want him playing next year? That's a story for another time. But he is just struggling. He's not seeing the field well. I mean, the interception he threw last night, it seemed like a pretty simple read. The linebacker was just sitting there baiting him into throwing that ball, and he still tried to drill it in. He gets intercepted. I mean, it's ugly to have so many weapons and have, you know, I guess, have had so many games earlier in the season where there was just no answer for these guys. If it wasn't Claypool, it was Smith-Schuster. If it wasn't Smith-Schuster, it was Diontae Johnson. And, I mean, now you look and it's like, yeah, you have three, maybe even four really good receivers, but you got to be able to get them the ball. And I don't think people are respecting the Steelers' run game enough to even, you know, have to stay honest on defense. So they're just dropping on these guys and making life incredibly difficult for Ben Roethlisberger. It's bad. I mean, it was bad. You know, you lose to Washington. It's like, okay, Washington kind of on a nice little push, and their young defensive line played really well. And then you lose to Buffalo. It's okay. Buffalo's playing really well. Buffalo's found their stride, and people kind of expected that after they lost to Washington. But to lose to the Ryan Finley-led Cincinnati Bengals is just a complete new level of oh crap. Like, I can't think of a better phrase, but that is, it's literally oh crap. They are falling apart at the seams. They don't have anything going right for them right now. Like, literally nothing. I don't know if it's the injuries on the defensive side of the ball. Bud Dupree's gone, and, you know, Devin Bush, they lost him earlier in the season, but they seem to be surviving those injuries for a little while, and now I think it's just falling apart. And KJ, I don't know what you think. I think a first-round exit is a very real possibility for this Steelers team unless they somehow figure it out really quick.
Well, if the playoffs started today, they would be playing the Titans, and again, I mean, they're one of those teams that, you know, their pass rush is, you know, it's great, but that's not going to help you against Derrick Henry, and I know their front's great, but Derrick Henry's a different kind of animal, and we saw what he was able to do against Baltimore last season, against New England, who, of course, had a great defense last season. But Derrick Henry is just, when he gets the ball, it's just, he is tough to stop. He's one of those guys that I look at, one of the few guys in the NFL that I'm like, I'm definitely going to have to tell my grandkids about watching that guy, because he is so big and so powerful. And then he gets an open space, and you're like, how is this guy faster than everybody else, too? Like, how is he running away from people when he's this monstrous and ginormous, and still he's able to run away from these guys? But, I mean, you said it. It's the Steelers, it is DEFCON 1 at this point, because you went from thinking you were Super Bowl bound to what is happening, how have we just lost three straight, and the division is somehow in question now at this point, too. I mean, if the Browns had pulled that one out against the Ravens, you would seriously be talking about the fact that you're tied right now, and you know for certain that game in Week 17 is for the division. Now you're even scared of it, because the Browns should have a layup. I mean, we know, of course, the Jets did just beat the Rams, but this still should be a layup for the Browns. And the Steelers have a really hot Colts team coming in. And if you couldn't handle the likes of Washington and the likes of Buffalo and the likes of Cincinnati, how are you going to handle this Indianapolis team? I just, you know, I think the Steelers, I still trust the talent there again, but it's starting to be the same old story with them where you worry, yes, you have the talent, but do you have the makeup to put it together? And this is what something we talked about with the Steelers for so many years when they had Bell and Antonio Brown and all these guys. And Mike Tomlin, for a while there, you know, and he still probably is the favorite for Coach of the Year, but it looked like you were starting to say, wow, you know, Mike Tomlin, he seems like he's finally put it together, and he's finally, you know, his team finally has, you know, some sort of consistency to it, and you're not worrying about them, you know, having this sort of level of, you know, like uncertainty and this wildness about them. And now it's just all falling apart here in the last 3 weeks. And I don't know. You wonder, you know, you said first round exit. A lot of people thought the Steelers, you know, they were joking about the Steelers. Well, are they going to choke like that? You know, they're probably choking the playoffs. They'll probably lose right away. Like, I know some people were like, oh, you know, are we going to see the Patriots end up playing the Steelers in the first round? And if that happens, like, wouldn't that be so great and everything like that? But, you know, now at this point, it just, it does seem like this team is just totally different than the one we saw early on in the season. And I made the joke that, you know, turns out the Steelers 11-0 was just as fake as the Patriots 8-0 last season. And I know that people seem to like that. But I just looked this up, the Coach of the Year odds. Mike Tomlin, he's tied for fifth right now in Coach of the Year, on the rankings for Coach of the Year. Ron Rivera is the favorite. Kevin Stefanski second. Sean McDermott's third. And Brian Flores is fourth. So suddenly a guy that you seemed like a shoe-in is now kind of a long shot. And it's just, it's been totally night and day for the Steelers over the last few weeks. And it really comes down to their defense hasn't been so bad. It's the offense that's really fallen apart. And Claypool, he looked like a guy that, like, you know, was going to be a star in this league for a while there. And it's kind of the same thing we talked about with the Buccaneers of, like, You have so many guys. How are you not able to just attack the third or fourth corner on these teams and find a way to get yards? But they just can't figure it out recently.
That coach of the year thing is really interesting to me. But I think it's kind of, you know, you get more credit when you're, I guess, working with less and you're able to make adjustments on the fly. Like Mike Tomlin, the going was so good. And then things, you know, it's kind of hit the fan, for lack of a better phrase. And now he has not been able to make adjustments. So I would be surprised if he's even a top three vote getter for coach of the year. But that just shows you how crazy the NFL is, right? You go from the beginning of the season where, like you said, he was a shoo-in. It was like, I mean, this is unbelievable. Nobody had the Steelers doing what they did in the first 10 weeks. And Roethlisberger come back the way they did and the way they were playing on defense. It was unbelievable. But now it's like you said, it's fallen apart completely. And I am not offended by your reference, KJ. I think this is just almost an exact representation of what the Patriots were last year when they were undefeated, and then they started to just completely fall apart as well. Sometimes the going isn't as good as you think it is, and when reality strikes, it's actually pretty hard to deal with. So it must be a tough time to be a Steelers fan right now, but guess what? I don't feel too bad for you.
All right, and that's going to wrap it up for our rankings, Colin. There are five most interesting teams for the NFL playoff picture right now. We'll see if some other teams get in. Obviously, the Ravens on the outside looking in right now. But can they leapfrog? Maybe the Dolphins. Who knows? But, Colin, thank you. 2 weeks out, it should be a fun wrap-up to the NFL season. A lot of craziness. It's crazy to me how much better the AFC is than the NFC this year. It's the biggest disparity I've seen in the conferences in a long time. And it had been trending this way for a while. The AFC had been better for a while. But just to see it this starkly is remarkable to me. It is insane that we're looking at maybe a 6-8 team right now in the playoffs. Like they could finish 6-10 and there could be a 6-10 realistically winner of that division. And it's crazy to say that, but it's in the cards. And I really it's baffling. But Colin, thank you for joining us and talking about the NFL this week, because it was a nice break from the Patriots.
Yeah, it's definitely a nice break from the Patriots. And I guess let me leave off with just a little message for my Patriot fan friends out there who are listening. We had a 20-year run. If you're starting to complain about Belichick and moving on, and don't get too far ahead of yourselves. We had one bad year. We're going to see what happens this offseason with some cap space and some opportunity to turn things around. So don't jump ship just yet and make yourself look like an idiot. You went through the greatest run a football team has probably ever had in the history of the sport. So be glad it happened. You know, what's the phrase they say, KJ? Don't cry because it's over. Laugh because it happened. Let Buffalo Bills fans have their party and whatever that they, you know, they beat us in the AFC East. It's 1 year. I'm 22 years old. It's 1 year in my lifetime that I've had to suffer a little bit. I'm doing just fine over here. I'm able to, you know, keep some positive perspective. So Patriots fans out there, well, it's not going to be as exciting of a holiday season because you know you're not going to the playoffs. Stay positive. Enjoy the other football. There's plenty to be optimistic about moving forward. And, you know, I'm sure I'll be back on here soon enough, KJ, talking about the Patriots and what's to come next.
Yeah, and it is crazy to me because I always knew that once Tom Brady left, the next quarterback was never going to be good enough. And I knew that people were going to take for granted what Tom Brady was, and they were going to look at the next quarterback and be like, this guy is awful. Like, this guy can't even play in the NFL, because you were so used to, you're so privileged to watch Tom Brady play for so many years. And now you hear these things, right? Like, oh, well, I would have rather had Andy Dalton or Alex Smith or any of these guys that you hear. And I tweeted something out today, like, Cam Newton's passer rating is pretty much the exact same as those guys. And those guys are not third in the league in rushing touchdowns. And those guys all have way better weapons than Newton's playing with. Andy Dalton's playing with Amari Cooper. And Alex Smith is playing with Terry McLaurin, who is great. And it's like, you look at these guys and you're like, oh, that guy would have been better than Cam Newton. And it's, you don't realize those guys, you would hate those guys if they were here too, because they're not Tom Brady. And you don't realize how lucky you were to watch that guy play quarterback for so many years. Cam Newton, I don't want him back. I don't think he's all that great, but I still look at him and I say he's honestly not as bad as people are making him out to be. They're giving, if we're handing out blame pie for this season, Cam Newton is getting served a much larger slice than he should be.
I completely agree. And, you know, like I said, I think there are some reasons to be slightly optimistic moving forward. Bill, for the first time in a long time, will have some cap space to play around with, maybe a little bit higher of a draft pick than usual. So I think there is some hope to be had in the future. But KJ, thanks again for having me on. I always love coming on here, talking about either the Patriots or the NFL as a whole. It's a great time. I wish you the happiest holiday season you could possibly have during the crazy times we're living in. And I look forward to coming back on the show soon.
Yeah, it should be a fun Zoom call, but we'll make it work. But yeah, I mean, we weren't even going to talk about the Patriots. We weren't going to talk about Cam Newton, but I had to leave it on that thought. That just think about that, people. Think about the fact that with worse weapons, Newton has almost the same passer rating as those guys, and also 11 rushing touchdowns. So it would seem to signal that Newton is better, but continue to complain by all means. I don't want to take away from the pity party you're throwing for yourself. All right, guys, thank you for listening to this episode of the podcast. You can follow Colin on Twitter at @KananaColin. You can follow me on Twitter at @BikeKidJiro. Follow Guy Boston Sports. Check out everything over there, especially NBA season starting up tonight. Some good stuff over there ahead of NBA season, so be sure to check that out. And thanks for listening, guys. We'll see you next week.